International Edition, our new program taking a closer look at stories of the day, social media, and entertainment. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, control of the Iraqi city of Ramadi, the fight against ISIS, cyber espionage with the Great Cannon, and the 2015 Billboard Music Awards.
I love you so much more than I'll ever be able to say to you. Thank you so much.
It's all ahead. The United States insists the situation in the Iraqi city of Ramadi remains fluid and contested, despite the claim Sunday by the Islamic State group to have seized the western provincial capital, giving the militants their largest victory this year after days of intense clashes. Seven airstrikes were carried out against IS fighters in Ramadi Sunday by the U.S.-led coalition. Meanwhile, a spokesman for the governor of Anbar province said government soldiers were fleeing the city. Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi implored troops not to abandon their posts and rallied militia to retake the city. VOA's Victor Beatty has been following the story and joins me now here in the studio. Victor, what have you found out?
Well, Susan, I spoke earlier with RAND Corporation senior political scientist and career U.S. Army officer Rick Brennan. He says the Pentagon assessment is accurate and says pockets of Iraqi forces inside Ramadi continue to put up some stiff resistance.
It was significant in the fact that they captured the Anbar Operations Center. They were able to raise the flag, but they no sooner got there than they had to disperse and to go out into other areas out of fear of U.S. airstrikes. So, again, it was a tactical victory for ISIS, but the battle's still taking place.
This is located just 125 kilometers west of Baghdad. How significant is that?
That's very significant. To the extent you're able to capture Ramadi, what you'll end up with is having the cities of Fallujah as well as the Ramadi and closer to the Syria border all under the control of ISIS. And so that gives a natural avenue of approach where ISIS can approach from Ramadi through Fallujah into some of the areas in and around Baghdad in the future. So it is a significant advance should they be able to hold this. But again, the battle is still taking place, so we have to watch this.
This is a Sunni territory. Will they be welcomed by the Sunni community?
They haven't been. And again, throughout that entire area, the Sunni leaders have been resisting the advances of ISIS. They've been one of those in charge. I think one of the big failures of the government of Iraq to date has been its unwillingness to arm, train, and equip a Sunni National Guard, or what had existed as the Sons of Iraq during the time period the United States had forces there, because those are the forces that are going to fight the hardest for the city. But the Shia militias will be coming in. They're not great forces, but they're dedicated and they're loyal. And so we'll have to see the degree to which U.S. support for both the militias, the Iraqi army, and the federal police can assist and retake portions of Ramadi in the near term.
And Brennan said despite the early April fall of the IS-controlled northern city of Tikrit to Iraqi-led forces, the IS group is far from vanquished. In fact, he says it controls major cities such as Fallujah and Hit in the west, and Mosul, and is contesting Beji and its oil refineries to the north. Just last month, the Pentagon said the IS group had lost between 25% and 30% of the territory controlled in Iraq since U.S.-led airstrikes were launched back in August.
Well, it's a very fluid situation.
It certainly is, and some would say it's a deteriorating situation for Baghdad.
Well, thank you very much, Victor, for stopping by and sharing.
All right, Susan.
That was VOA's Victor Beatty joining us here in the studio. And now we turn to my colleague Jim Stevenson, who looks at the fight against the Islamic State.
In a rare move Friday and into Saturday, U.S. Special Forces staged a ground raid in eastern Syria, killing an Islamic State commander and capturing his wife. The White House and Pentagon on Saturday confirmed the death of Abu Sayyaf, who reportedly directed IS oil operations. Cal Perry is our host of VOA's popular hashtag VOA program. He spoke with former Deputy CIA Director Michael Morrell about his new book, The Great War of Our Time, The CIA's Fight Against Terrorism. Cal is in our studio with us. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Jim.
Tell me a little bit about what the former Deputy CIA Director had to say.
Well, on Syria, he really, know, he academically said there are five wars being fought in Syria, but the one that he focused on was the proxy war between the Saudi Arabia and Iran. And he said the U.S. should back Saudi fully in this war, which I thought was surprising because it's a bit of a departure from the administration's position, certainly as they carry out nuclear negotiations with Iran.
And also, it's an interesting situation with Islamic State on the ground, al-Qaeda operating in Syria, and a bit of a quandary for the United States.
Yeah, and certainly for this president, and when you speak to the former, you know, deputy director of the CIA, he makes it very clear that, that when you're talking about going into Syria, you're talking about going into a place that is lawless, and a place where the U.S. has not had intelligence on the ground. And this is an administration that is still living with an agency that is grappling with the catastrophe that was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. So these hard and fast decisions, you know, are a lot more difficult to make in that shadow.
Cal Perry is host of the program, hashtag VOA. Joining me here in the studio is web desk editor Andrew Palshevsky with a look at what's trending today. Andrew, what do you have to share?
Well, we were talking about Ramadi earlier and ISIS, and the hashtag trending today is hashtag Ramadi. And just to give you some numbers and an idea of how quickly this is ballooned on social media, the hashtag Ramadi was used 8,500 times on Saturday.
Wow, that's amazing.
ISIS came in Sunday, took Ramadi. On Sunday, it was used 65,000 times. Yeesh. So just eight times as many times going into Sunday. So that gives you an idea of how quickly this has been trending and what a big topic it is.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, you now have people using this hashtag who are there, reporters, other folks, sending out pictures on social media. So that creates a whole new element. You're getting a firsthand look at what's going on through Twitter and Facebook and other media.
How do they all know this, how many times it's used?
There are different websites that measure metrics. So there's a website we use to look at how often hashtags are used. Another hashtag actually that's been used a lot last night, over 3 million times, was hashtag BBMAs, which is the Billboard Music Awards. And I wanted to bring that in because there's been an interesting social media phenomenon with the Billboard Music Awards. Taylor Swift released a music video for her song Bad Blood at the awards. And for the past couple weeks, she's been kind of teasing it on social media, building up some kind of the hype on that. And she's gotten millions and millions and millions of likes on these posts that she's done. So this is maybe a new way to promo some new songs and media from artists that we're seeing.
Okay. Well, thank you, Andrew. Always appreciate it. And that's web desk editor Andrew Palshevsky.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Some graduating secondary school students who plan to attend college may opt to wait and take a year off before they actually enroll for classes. Parents concerned that their young student may have difficulty readjusting to academic life after a year off often discourage these pre-college sabbaticals. But the findings in a new study by researchers at the Academy of Finland found that taking a year off between high school and college does not weaken a young person's enthusiasm to study, nor does it impact their overall academic performance once the college term begins. The researchers found that those who do begin their college education immediately after secondary school graduation were more resilient in their studies and more committed to their study goals. But on the other hand, the study also showed that these young people tend to be more stressed than those who wait a year. And that's your Science in a Minute.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has met with the South Korean president in Seoul to discuss security on the Korean Peninsula and bilateral issues. Kerry later said North Korea has not even come close to taking the steps needed to rein in its nuclear weapons program for Washington to initiate talks. He also said it is likely the North will be referred to the International Criminal Court if its current violations of human rights continue.
And it is also why, for the first time, the UN Security Council last year took up the question of a referral of North Korea and particularly Kim Jong-un's behavior, to the International Criminal Court. And if their horrific conduct continues, it is hard to see how that referral to the criminal court would not take place.
You're tuned to International Edition, coming to you on the Voice of America.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry expressed confidence Monday that pro-government forces in Iraq would regain control of the provincial capital of Ramadi from Islamic State fighters.
Their movements, by and large, in most certainly where there are air patrols and other capacities, have been reduced. But that's not everywhere. And so it is possible to have the kind of attack we've seen in Ramadi. But I am absolutely confident in the days ahead that will be reversed.
In Yemen, the Saudi-led coalition has resumed airstrikes against Shiite rebels after the end of a five-day humanitarian ceasefire. The UN Security Council has condemned fighting in two northern states in South Sudan and the repeated violations of a ceasefire agreement the government and rebels signed early last year. Ukraine says three of its soldiers were killed and 17 wounded in new fighting with pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine. This is Joe Palca reporting from Washington for VOA.
Coming up on International Edition, cyber espionage with the great Canon and results of the 2015 Billboard Music Awards. As the World Wide Web has evolved and grown more complicated, so have the tools and techniques of cyber espionage and military action. Perhaps nowhere is this evolution more clearly seen than in China's recent disclosed Great Canon and its similarities to a tool reportedly possessed by the United States known as Quantum. Depending on how they are wielded, both can serve as a high-tech tool for spies, intimidating weapons of cyber assault, or a combination of both, analysts say. VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard has been looking into the growing weaponization of the web and joins us now here in the studio. Hey, Doug. Always good. Nice to have you.
Always good to be here.
Hey, first, what is this Great Canon and how does it work?
So no doubt many have heard about the so-called Great Firewall of China. This has been around for probably about 15, 20 years, and it's a mesh, a series of various filters and other devices that really try and sift out websites that Chinese officials don't want people in China going to. So a great example is, for example, the New York Times. Several years ago, the New York Times ran a set of stories that were not so complimentary to the Chinese leadership and their families, and the New York Times has been a website non grata, in effect. So the Great Firewall is this extensive series of meshes that filters out traffic from getting into China. Now, what the Great Canon does is it uses that same mesh of filters, but for a very different purpose. So what it does is it takes incoming traffic, unencrypted incoming traffic to China, and again filters it out. And if it finds some of those key trigger words people looking for, it takes that traffic and then directs it in a concentrated and sustained denial of service attack at any target that it wants. So they call it a great cannon. You could almost think of it as a laser. It's taking, sort of diffuse bits of data and then focusing them in on an adversary to bring the website down.
Like, you mean if a newspaper was sending an article that the Chinese government didn't approve of, they could shoot all this information back at the newspaper?
Or any select target that it wants. And really what they were doing when they first started using it is they were taking people just searching Baidu. Baidu's, probably the largest web service in China. People just searching for, all kinds of various bits of information. It took some of those searches that it didn't necessarily want people to get the responses to, and it targeted them specifically in the case when it was just operated in March. It focused it at two websites, one greatfire.org, which is an anti-censorship site and effort, and the other is a Mandarin version of the New York Times.
Well, how do you defend against this thing?
There's really only one way, and it's not even foolproof. The ultimate answer is all of your web traffic from the point, what they call end to end, the point where it leaves your computer to the point where it goes to where you want to get it to, needs to be encrypted. At this point, the Great Canon, like the Great Firewall, can't search for those encrypted email messages or search requests because obviously all that information is hidden. But as we know, most people don't encrypt. And so that basically leaves just about anybody open.
So now there's this thing called Quantum. It sounds like a James Bond movie.
It does, doesn't it?
It does.
So Quantum is a program. It's actually a set of programs that are allegedly operated by the NSA. Now, I say allegedly.
That's the National Security Agency.
Yes, I say allegedly because these come from data and files that were leaked by Edward Snowden. So people who've been looking into this are reasonably certain that Quantum exists. So what Quantum is, it's slightly different. It uses various techniques. I'll just refer to them as injection. So what it can do is it can take, again, unencrypted web traffic. It can inject all kinds of sort of mean bits of information or data in there to trick the end user. So you might, in effect, think you're going to, say, voanews.com, and you put in the search, and a website pops up, and it looks like voanews.com, but it's not. It's a complete phony. So the NSA is building basically phony websites, redirecting traffic, and then also using this injecting little bits of malware into your computer that allows them to snoop around your emails, your databases, your activities, all kinds of things.
Speaking of voanews.com, you've got a story on there about all this.
We do. It's called, I think the title is, U.S.-China Possess New Cyber Weapons, which sort of says it. And I think really that kind of strikes at the core of what we were looking at here, is to what degree are these tools of censorship, are they spying tools, or are they, you know, really military weapons? One of the researchers I spoke with, the co-author of the report that initially uncovered the Great Canon, he said these are expressly tools of aggression. They may serve some ancillary purpose in terms of censoring sites governments don't want or spying on people, but really these are aggressive tools that are used, you know, in military-like attacks.
Well, thank you, Doug, for coming by. It's always interesting.
Thank you.
That's VOA cyber correspondent Doug Bernard right here with me in our Washington studios. And this is International Edition on VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Last night was a huge night for music as the Billboard Awards took center stage in the U.S. city of Las Vegas. VOA Music's Nikki Strong is here to fill us in on what went down. And Nikki, this is the first time you and I have worked together. I want to welcome you.
Thank you so
much. Very nice to meet you.
I appreciate it.
So what's all the hype about?
Okay, well, Taylor Swift dominated the night. The show kicked off with the premiere of her new video, Bad Blood, which depicted this cool, futuristic world of kick-butt female assassins, many of whom were fellow celebrities, so that was cool. And then from there, the night belonged to her. She took home 8 awards, including Top Artist, Top Female Artist, Top Billboard 200 Artist, and what was really cool was how she attributed much of her success to her fans.
To the fans that I talk to online and the ones I see at the shows. I love you so much more than I'll ever be able to say to you. Thank you so much.
I also think one of the sweetest acceptance speeches of the evening came from Meghan Trainor when she won for her song All About That Bass.
No, my mom and I looked at each other and she held my hand because I was like, it's okay, Mom, I'm not going to get these. And she was like, it's okay if you don't get them. And then literally they said All About That Bass. And I was like, we looked at each other like, what? Oh, gosh, I have to go up there now. And then the crowd was so loud, I couldn't even speak. They were just, it was amazing. I don't even know how to explain it.
It was pretty cool. Megan did well. Swift took home the most trophies, followed by Sam Smith, Iggy Azalea, and Pharrell, who each won 3 awards. Sam Smith took home the coveted Top New Artist. Iggy Azalea won the Top Rap Artist and Top Rap Song for Fancy, beating out Nicki Minaj in both categories. Scandal. And Pharrell won Top R&B Song for Happy. No surprise there. But he beat out Beyonce for Top R&B Album and Artist of the Year. So I know, kind of scandalous too. I don't know if the Beehive would really appreciate that. But
well, I
you
even
know.
Like that bass song, though. That's
I
really
like
good.
It too. I like it too.
Tell me about this. How was Kanye West? You know, he's gotten into some trouble in the past.
Kanye West. Now, I think he was really like the biggest loser of the evening because his performance was a mess.
I'll
tell you why. He closed out the show, but because there was so much profanity in his performance, they had to bleep out like at least a minute of it. And then on top of that, the pyrotechnics were so intense and overwhelming, we couldn't see him. So as watching the awards from someone on television, you know, for someone who's watching from the television, we couldn't see him. And we couldn't hear him. So it was really a fiasco. It was kind of comical, but not in a good sense.
Well, you know, you would have thought he would have thought about that bleeping bit part. But how was a tribute to B.B. King? I mean, that's a sad story there.
Well, you know, B.B. King, the Billboard Awards last night positioned itself as a night of historic first and memorable moments. So like Iggy Azalea and Britney Spears performing their song Pretty Girls for the first time on stage, the first time Mariah Carey sang on the Billboard Awards in 7 years. So in light of following through on that promise, the tribute to B.B. King was really shallow and disappointing. It was a quick paragraph, a picture, and a shot of a guitar sitting on the stage.
Maybe it'll do something more on another occasion, you know?
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Nikki, for stopping by. Appreciate it as always. In the future.
Thank you. Pleasure being here.
Okay, that's Nikki Strong with the VOA Music Division. If you would like to listen to today's program, just stop on by our website at voanews.com. That's voanews.com. Thank you for joining us today.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is concerned about the treatment of political prisoners in Belarus. On May 4th, former presidential candidate Nikolai Statkevich was sentenced to harsher prison conditions and increased security measures for alleged violations of prison rules. Mr. Statkevich is serving a 6-year sentence related to his participation in peaceful protests following the December 2010 presidential elections. The United States is also concerned by the April 30th denial of Mikolai Ziadok's appeal of a February court decision that extended his prison term by 1 year for alleged prison rules violations. Mr. Ziadok was scheduled to be released in March 2015. In response to international pressure, President Alexander Lukashenko's government has released some political prisoners. For example, between January and September 2011, and again in August and September 2012, Belarusian authorities released, pardoned, or reclassified the offenses as less serious for several of the detainees facing riot charges from events following the December 2010 election. According to the Department of State's annual country reports on human rights practices and non-governmental organization reports, many of them had to admit guilt as a condition of their release. In April 2012, Belarusian authorities released former opposition presidential candidate Andrei Sannikau and his aide, convicted in connection with the peaceful protests in 2010. But according to the State Department and NGO reports, once released, such individuals remain subject to police supervision, and their civil and political rights are not fully restored. Some have also been forbidden, without explanation, from leaving Belarus. The United States renews its call on the government of Belarus to release all political prisoners immediately and unconditionally, and to restore fully their political and civil rights.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.